This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
What's up and welcome back to the Kinda Funny screencast. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the big daddy himself, Greg Miller.
They said the line. They said it. I was elbowing generally hard. I was so excited.
The Texas Treat Latino Heat, clicking heads and ripping them to shreds. The Globetrotting, headshotting Nitro Rifle from Twitch.tv, Andy Cortez.
Great morning, everybody. What line are you talking about, Greg? The
good isn't a thing you are, it's a thing you do. I've seen every episode of the show with you.
I was thinking. I was like, I don't remember anyone saying, "I am Miss Marvel."
You're not even a Captain Marvel. You're more of a Miss Marvel.
Rounding out the group today, we've been trying to get him for the last couple episodes, but here he is making his first appearance on this show. GameSpot's own Timur Hussein.
Salam, everyone.
How are you doing?
You know, I beat the Rona. But the Rona is still beating me.
Yeah.
It's a cool world. Yeah.
I want to get into all of your thoughts on even the previous episodes in just a second, but let's get through the rigmarole. Of course, this is the Kinda Funny screencast where each and every week we get together to talk about the latest in TV, movies, and trailers. Things have been popping off recently. So if you have interest in Marvel, Star Wars, any nerd pop culture shit, you need to check out this show on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. You can also get it as a podcast by searching your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny screencast, and we'll be right there for you. To lead into Thor Love and Thunder, we have started our Thor rewatch. Episode 1 is live now. We got Thor the Dark World coming out tomorrow, live on Patreon today. That is on in review, so you can check that out if it entices you. If you want to watch live as we record it, this show and in review, you got to go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers Gordon McGuire, Molecule, and Fargo Brady have done. Today we're brought to you by Shopify and Athletic Greens, but we'll talk about that later. Tam, we're 3 episodes in. Give me your brief thoughts on episodes 1 and 2, and then give me your thoughts on episode 3.
So 1 and 2, I was very fortunate that I got to watch it early, because Marvel, like, yeah, that guy's brown. Let's give it to him early. So they gave it to me early, and I remember texting you, Tim, and I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is really good. And I've been loving every episode. And the thing I've been trying to do as a conscious effort, and it's something that is kind of like weird to say, but also necessary, is try and separate the feeling of this is good because it's representation, and this is good because it's just a good show. And initially, I was struggling to really filter out this is good because it's representation, because overwhelmingly, I feel like it's really appealing to me because it is me and it represents me and it reflects my life and my culture. But I think the more that I watch it, I've watched the first 2 episodes a couple more times and I've obviously seen episode 3. I think it's also now I'm confident in saying it's just a good show. And it's just a good, fun, like, enjoyable experience on its own that anyone who doesn't have the cultural connections that I do can enjoy. The first 2 ones were really, they remind me, it's interesting because it's very different from the comic series. They, a lot of departures in Kamala's origin and, like, the world around her. At the same time, at each episode, I come away feeling like this is such a good version of the comic book series. And it's not because it adapts the one-to-one origin, the narrative, the lines, that kind of thing. What it does, it adapts the spirit of what G. Willow Wilson and Sana Amanat and the other people from Marvel wanted to bring to the Marvel comics and the world of comic books through Miss Marvel. And that was, you know, something different, a culture that was very underexplored. You know, a brown character front-facing that isn't a side part, isn't a bit part in another person's story, and give people who look like Kamala in America and around the world something to aspire to, something to be uplifted by. And I feel like in the same way that the comic book does that, this TV show is doing that as well. So in spirit, it's as faithful as a representation and adaptation of Ms. Marvel, the comics, as it could be, if not in the letter of the law, as in L-O-R-E, not the L-A-W. yeah. And like episode 3, I thought was fantastic. We got a lot of kind of setup of the big bad finally. And I love that they went with, which we'll discuss, they went with something that I've always felt. I've written a lot of stories in my time that have never been published. I've always wanted to write about, you know, do my own superhero stories and that kind of stuff. Like most of us have done countless amount of stories all fixated on Jin. And the fact that they came in and they were like, we're going to make Jin the major thing in this. I was like, the fact that they did that, they understand what's interesting as a storytelling device to people like me, because I have written the stories around a superhero that has to battle and is in the world of Jin. So I'm like, awesome. This is so cool. This is so good. I would do it this way. And how can I be mad at someone else doing it this way? It's just, it's perfect. I love it.
That's rad. Andy, what did you think of episode 3?
I wasn't here for last week's episode either. I mean, I think this show just continues to be delightful and fun to watch. I think that Samina Ahmed, I think her line delivery and acting continues to be pitch perfect. She's perfect. There hasn't been a line read that you ever kind of cringe at or kind of like, that this feels like rookie acting type shit. She's awesome.
Nadia?
Yes. Yeah. I believe so. I googled
no,
it.
No. Nakia is played by Yasmin Fletcher.
Oh yeah, Nakia is yeah.
Are you talking about Ms. Marvel?
Yeah, Ms. Marvel. Yeah.
Amon Valini.
Sorry. my stupid thing's going off. I don't want to say the thing. I don't want to conjure the thing, or else it's gonna keep on talking. Yeah, I think her acting continues to be fantastic. I love the little crew she's getting, and they found a way that, unlike what Moon Knight failed to do for me, to make the action fun and to make you have a power set. Again, I've talked about this before. It's like building out a fighting kit for a video game character. You have this power set and this move set. How are you going to make it visually interesting? And apart from the story and from the Jin kind of coming after her there at that wedding, I just love the way it all came together. But more importantly, I think they found ways to make the fighting look fun and appealing to the eye. And I thought there were several moments in this where it just completely outshined anything Moon Knight did action wise.
Wow.
Which is like shocking to say, because Moon Knight, I feel like, is supposed to kind of be on, if anything, that's maybe the one that you go to for combat and for violence and stuff like that. But I just thoroughly enjoyed the whole fight scene. I love the sort of her friend, I'm blanking on his name right now.
Bruno.
I love the sort of the stuff he's going through right now. Do I leave her? Do I go to California? I don't know. I just, everything about this show so far has been kind of pitch perfect for me. We got less of the silly drawn kind of overlay stuff that I really enjoyed about episodes 1 and 2. There wasn't a whole lot of that here, but I understand that we had to kind of focus on the main issue at hand, which is these Jin are here in the world and they seem like they are, you know, not a threat, and they just want to help out. They just want to go home. But then we kind of see them turn their ugly heads, and it's really awesome.
Greg Miller, what do you think of episode 3?
I had a great time with it. I would say for me personally, this would be the first. It didn't hit the highs of episode 1 and 2. And I think it's just because it was such an exposition heavy episode. And I didn't necessarily love how they did that. I thought introducing so many Jin at once was very Eternals like. And then the fact that you just give me so many disposable ones of like, well, I thought it was cool when it was, you know, sitting there, and I when we ended last week, I thought that was the grandmother. I was confused. I didn't realize this is going to be a grandmother's friend or great grandmother's friend, right? So I thought that was an interesting thing, and I was like, I wanted more, a little bit more of like who she was, but then to add in the other people. And he's obsessed with culture, and yeah, the dumbest parts of the culture. I was like, I get it. I understand there's a team, and I'm actually interested in the fact that there's a team. But then we turn so quickly. I thought it was a disservice to it that in one episode they go from being like, oh, okay, cool, she has some answers, to, oh, they're bad. and they're going to be bad, and they're going to be super bad guys right now, right? It's all happening right now, right now. Because even, like, you know, Kamala being in talking to Bruno and, like, you know, we can work through this. We can get there. You know, let's keep working on it. Like, I didn't think her, you know, demands were crazy. And then, like, again, for great-grandmother or, well, great-grandmother's friend, right, to be like, there is no time. I'm through waiting. I'm like, how you've been here how long? And, like, but now, like, what's the, why is now the thing you've got to push through this? Like, you have to, I think she should be able to understand that she could get it, you know, quicker or better without the use of force or whatever. But I just thought that was a little bit too comic book showy, but I enjoyed it, of course. I thought the wedding was great. I thought, you know, my favorite part of this, as I've said before, is not the superheroing, right? It is the relationships and the family dynamics. So I thought the wedding was great and seeing everybody play off each other. And then, you know, I liked in the wedding and everything that happens, right? Kamala trying to protect everybody, not give away her identity. I then kind of did want her to fess up at the end when, you know, mom and dad are like, you can tell us anything. Because I teared up when it was her and her mom in the bathroom. And her mom's like, you know, whatever mountain you're in front of, like, you don't have to climb it alone. Like, I thought that was a really powerful, well-acted scene. And so I was hoping there at the end we would get the, she just turns her hand into something, right? And boom, it's credits there. And she reveals it to the entire family. But again, I enjoyed it. I'm not saying this is a bad episode or anything, but I wasn't as hyped coming off of it or through it as I was with episodes 1 and 2. Tim, what about you?
I continue to absolutely love this show. I feel like you're right, Greg, that this is the weakest episode by far, but that actually kind of excites me because I feel like this is the episode in other Marvel shows that we get second to last, and then we have one episode to kind of like get everything together. Here we have 3 episodes left. I do think that the switch from us essentially not having bad guys in episodes 1 and 2 to now having bad guys, and it happened at the end of episode 2, and the twist from them being like, we're on your side, now we're not on your side, happened so quickly that it makes me wonder, what are they trying to get to? Like, why did they speed through that so quickly in just in this one episode in particular? But I think they have a lot of story to tell, and kind of a lot of the hints that we got in this episode, I'm really kind of theorizing and thinking of what we got for the latter half of this show. And I think that the exposition in this, I'm hoping, is laying a kind of new foundation for a much more compelling hero versus villain storyline for the next 3 episodes, because I think that has been the weakest part of the show, because the show is so strong in every other way. Like, I think that the family dynamics continue to just absolutely shine and be the star of the show, not just family but her friends as well. For sure. And I think the show's doing a great job of building upon itself in a bunch of different like subplots that are like, even like Nakia's whole like running for the board and all that stuff. Like, I love that seems to be like a through line that they're caring about and putting effort into, because it is just as important as the superhero shit, to Tam's point of kind of that balance between the representation but then also like it being a good show. And I think there's a third pillar of it fitting into what we expect from the MCU, and hearing Bruno read a paper from Eric Selvig, it's just that those little tiny connections to the wider MCU that, like, if you don't notice, it doesn't matter, but if you do, you appreciate it because you know that they put that in for us to hear and be like, oh, that's awesome, you know? And just a lot of little things of hints of like what they could be doing with this new origin story for Kamala. I'm really into it. I totally agree with Tam that I prefer that this isn't a one-to-one, that it's instead kind of taking it and being like, cool, how can we tell the same heart of that story, but in a way that makes more sense for not just TV, but for Marvel Studios in general. But I can't wait. I think that this show has the potential to be my number one Disney Plus show. I think it still has a lot to earn to beat Loki and WandaVision for me, but I think that it has the potential, and halfway through, that's an exciting place to be. Before we continue with our thoughts, though, let me tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens. I've been using AG1 the last few months because I figured it was well past time I start thinking about vitamins, but I'm usually not the biggest fan of their format. So being able to drink a flavored water is much more up my alley. And I'm a huge fan here of the fact that it doesn't taste super healthy. It kind of has like this mild tropical taste to it that I look forward to every morning. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. It's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved only for big businesses to everyone. So upstarts, startups, established businesses, content creators alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. I love how Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to across the globe. Our content creator friends use Shopify to manage all their merch sales and stuff, and I recently got Gia a pair of Allbirds from the Allbirds website, which also uses Shopify. So that's an example of big websites using Shopify for their sales. You can gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting on conversion rates, profit margins, and to help you supercharge your knowledge of your sales and your success. You can go to shopify.com/kfgames, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial, and you can get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/kfgames right now. That's shopify.com/kfgames for a free 14-day trial. shopify.com/kfgames. Go for it, Tam.
Burned. Oh, was burned. Burned, Andy.
No, I'm going to chuck to Andy. Go on.
I had just a random thing I wanted to point out, and mm-hmm. it sort of reminds me of, this is like a wild stretch, but after I played Forza Horizon 5, or after I watched Coco, I was like, man, it's so great to not see Mexico depicted in media as orange-tinted drug duels, cocaine battles, fucking, you know, cartels, all that shit. I feel like American media has done such a obvious, you know, this isn't a surprise, but it's done such an obvious disservice to Middle Eastern cultures. And the phrase Allahu Akbar has always had a negative connotation in so much American media. And it was genuinely beautiful. Like, I teared up at that wedding to see just this family really, really happy. So I just wanted to throw that out, that like, I feel like it's so rare to kind of see that, especially in now, you know, Disney, not, you know, Disney's not a perfect company by any means, but it was just beautiful to kind of see it in a Disney show there.
Yeah. The use of the phrase wherever at the wedding where they shout Takbir and everyone shouts Allahu Akbar, it's just like, it was a moment where it was like, this is made by people who get it and people who are authentic about it, because obviously, as Andy said, that is only ever shown before a terrorist shoots an RPG in modern media. And the fact that they show it in the moment of happiness is pretty incredible. I think like the authenticity of this is head and shoulders above anything else I've seen literally anywhere.
Wow.
Surprisingly, like, Miss Marvel is the only, the comic book series is the only other place that I feel good about. It's the only other thing I would give to my Muslim friends and family and be like, read this or experience this. And now this TV show is the only other thing from Western media that I would give to friends and family and be like, watch this. It won't make you feel bad about who you are. And even like, we had one instance of South Asian culture being represented in the Marvel universe, and that was Kingo in Eternals. And I hated it. Like, I thought it was terrible. Like, he's as a character, like, they do the Bollywood thing, and then he's an asshole for a lot of it. He's kind of annoying, and then he pisses off just for the most important part of the movie, which is like, okay, cool, you tried something and you failed at it. But this is like an authentic representation, but also it's authentic in the treatment of people from that look like us in modern civilization and modern society. So damage control walking into the mosque. The first thing that I saw was, the first thing that immediately, I didn't see and point it out, it's like an instinctive, like, this hurts me, is everyone was wearing their shoes. Like, and I was like, that is so disrespectful. I
even from, if they, you know, an outsider who, you know, doesn't know mosque culture or whatever, the show had already established that to me. So when I saw her walk in, I was like, oof, I know that's not good.
Yeah. And like, they immediately, like, they point that out. They're like, you wear your shoes next time. And it's like in a fun, take your shoes off next time. And it's like in a fun way instead of like a preachy kind of way. But like that whole, there's an undercurrent of war on terror. There was a way that we were treated and we continue to be treated in the war of terror period. Like we were disrespected and we were treated like trash in so many different ways. There's a bit where there's a line where the damage control agent says, like, go into every mosque, synagogue, temple, gurdwara, whatever. And that is like, when I heard that, I was like, I know that is so authentic because I remember there was that phase where it was the authorities saying, just go into anywhere where brown people congregate. Because my friends who are Sikh and Hindu were like, yeah, the police came looking for Muslims to our place of worship. And that's exactly what happened here. And then at the end, where they arrest the jinn people, and their kind of justification is, we found a brown woman. We found a woman. That's all they were looking for. They were looking for nothing more. They weren't looking for Kamala Khan, the teenager who's potentially, we just need to arrest a brown person. And the fact that they did it that way, like, to people who don't have that kind of context, they might be like, that was weird. They just grabbed the complete wrong person. But to people who do have the context, realize that's exactly what they did. They weren't looking for specific people. They were just looking for anyone that fit the bill. So, like, the amount of times that I was arrested in London for being suspicious, like, makes perfect sense. I'm not a suspicious person. They were looking for anyone. And so, like, to see that reflected in the show as well, I was like, damn, they're not, like, shying away from the way we were treated back then, which is kind of wild. And, like, it's the fact that it's represented, that element of it represented, is also, like, hopefully educational to people who may not have that context. They can see how we were treated, where we were just, like, disrespected and like, we still are treated as the villains of the universe.
Damn, also, I mean, sorry, real quick. Like, obviously, racism's out of control and it's so fucked up, and I'm so sorry for the things you've had to live through. But I can't just let it slide that you're going to say you're not a suspicious person. you have the gray fox helmet behind you, and I've had the pleasure of hanging out with you. You give me the willies sometimes. Listen, not at anything about your race. Just because of who you are, Tam.
I've always expected the worst from Tam whenever I play a Souls game.
And honestly, I know you have, and I will continue to deliver. there's also amazing things that happen that in that same way that unless you know, you don't really pick up on it. And I want to point out one thing. There's that scene where Nakia erupts into Kamala's bedroom and, like, flops over onto her bed. Like, did you pick up anything interesting there?
She took off her
headscarf. Exactly. Headscarf, yeah. So the thing is, like, that's such a specific thing that if you don't know, you don't know. But women who wear headscarves, that when they're out in public, they wear it. And it's like, you know, protect your modesty or whatever it may be. Different people have different reasons. However, the kind of understanding and the rule is when you're around people that you're very familiar, close with, and you're in a safe environment, you're allowed to take it off. And so I remember, like, my sister, my cousins, the female friends in my life who would be wearing headscarves outside. But the moment they got into a safe space, the first thing they do is, like, rip that thing off and just be normal. Like, just drop over and be like, oh, fuck this, that. So when Nakia did that, I was like, oh, that's so cool. Like, I love that they did that. Like, and it's kind of like this really interesting thing because me as an outsider looking into it, I'm like, oh, wait, should I be seeing this? Because technically Nakia's not like, she don't know I'm there. But like, as a viewer, I'm like peering into a private moment. And it gives this series to people who have the kind of like, cultural familiarity and intimacy that most people won't ever get. Like, I feel way closer to Nakia seeing her take the headscarf off because of me knowing the implication of what that means around people, other people. It's really, really cool.
So knowing that, Tam, does the ending, I guess, hit harder of her realizing that Kamala Khan's nightlight and she's been hiding it from her? And like, how, because there's this whole thing, and it's like watching it from the outside, I'm like, oh yeah, this is the normal superhero plot point, right? Of like, one of the friends finds out, but another, no, now it's going to be this huge stumbling block in their relationship. But they get past it pretty quick because Bruna's hurt and we go on, and that's the end of that thread right there.
It's hard to say, like, I would have expected, it's interesting because it's, I would expect, I'm not 100% sure. You know, the archetype is there's that one friend that you reveal this to, right? Like Ned or whoever it may be. Like, every superhero that's leading a double life has one person. And in my mind, I'm like, trying to figure out, is it Bruno or is it Nakia? Like, I'm not 100% sure on who it's going to be. Bruno, potentially not, because he's a love interest. So, like, but it makes sense for me to be Nakia. Also, the other thing is, like, what's interesting to me is this show feels more aspirational for South Asian people. Like, there's a level of, maybe it's because I'm not familiar with it, but like, there are moments that happen in this show between family members that is really sweet and really like loving, and it like brings me almost to tears. But also they I'm not saying they feel disingenuous, but they feel unfamiliar to me, because cards on the table, a lot of South Asian families don't have this kind of relationship. This is a Western South Asian family. Like, stuff like being told by your parents that they're proud of you and like they hope they're there to help you, like, that doesn't happen like a lot. Like, maybe I've had a really bad like upbringing or whatever, but like, for me, it's never happened. And most of the people that I know, like, that have grown up, they don't have their parents come to them being like, especially if they're like, you know, from Pakistan originally and they're immigrants and that kind of stuff. There's like, emotion is a tricky minefield to deal with. So seeing it happen in Miss Marvel, it is both interesting because it's a better representation of how a Western family, that immigrant family that has adapted to Western society, can be. And it also becomes like an aspirational thing, which is good. I hope that people from South Asian backgrounds are watching this and being like, this is how it can be if we were open, more open with each other. And I hope that, like, this is, and I kind of feel like that is one of the reasons why they're going through this thing where they don't, if she's not immediately revealing her kind of like secret to Nakia, and she's struggling to kind of tell her parents what's going on. It's partly because obviously she doesn't want to endanger them, but I also feel like it's a representation of that ingrained kind of closeness that is around emotions in South Asian culture.
I do think part of the disappointment from Nakia's perspective is that these agents are coming to all these mosques and they are disturbing everything that we're doing here. So I think that's mostly where the disappointment is going to come from her perspective. Yeah. But I do want to go back to that little bedroom scene where they have that moment of just such close friendship. And when she plops down on the bed and she says, like, what's wrong, boo-boo? Or I forget what exactly.
Squishy.
It's such a cute
squishy.
Little,
yeah.
Squishy. It's such a, like, we didn't see a whole lot of Nakia in episode 2, and I wasn't here for the episode 2 thing. Or we didn't see her in episode 1 a whole lot, right? In part 2, that's where they sort of establish that this friendship is here. And at first, I'm like, oh, you weren't really even in episode 1, and suddenly you all are like best friends. Okay, I'll see if I believe this. But
it doesn't pass the Andy Cortez test.
Yeah, it sure did, because I just think they're so lovely together. And that scene in the bedroom is, I think, one of the more beautiful friend moments in a lot of the MCU, where it seems so genuine and so authentic.
Sure.
Because of the performances, because of the, I think the writing is so just believable. It doesn't feel like two characters just talking on screen. It feels like these two friends have grown up all together, and then the directors are like, what would you all say to each other in this sequence? Yeah. And it's awesome when she kind of reveals, I got elected to the board, and she, you know, Kamala has that sort of tear in her eye. It's amazing. It's a really, really great moment for this show.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that this is continuing Marvel Studios' kind of strong suit of relationships, like friendships being kind of the most pivotal, meaningful relationships that we have. Because when it comes to the more romantic ones, I feel like we still haven't really gotten too many great examples of like romances we just fully believe in, right? Like Tony and Pepper, you're just kind of like, all right, we've seen it a lot, so like, we get it. But like, there's not really these shining examples. I think probably one of the better examples is Tom Holland and Zendaya, right? But even that, it's like being able to focus on, I think, the younger dynamics, like that, those high school dynamics, that's when friendships and relationships and who you are really starts to form. And I think they got that shit down to a science. And I think that they're really flexing when it comes to the interpersonal relationships of the show, because I'm right there with you. Like, I think that, you know, out of all the MCU, probably my favorite relationship of any sort is Tom Holland and Ned. And I think that we're getting a lot of those vibes with with Kamala and multiple characters in the show, yeah. Both Bruno and Naki. And I think that that's a really cool thing to see.
I think one of the things that I'd like to point out is like friendship and closeness is a very common kind of dynamic in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think what this does that is way more accurate, and it feels, again, one of those things that you pick up on if you have the context, is this is about community more than friendship. And like even familial relationship, community is so important to Muslim, Islamic, Pakistani, South Asian culture. It is basically like if you are going anywhere, like one of the key things about immigration is like you go to a place where you have community, and that's how you help you survive. Like you step, the fact that the mother says, her mom says, like, I found the mosque, is not her saying I found religion, I found faith. It's I found people like me, I found community. And that is taught in our culture as like how you strengthen every other aspect of your life, especially family. And I think that's what's interesting between the kind of dichotomy that it's exploring is this is the story of two immigrant families. One is the Pakistani family in America. One is the Jin family in America. And the dad says, you know, a family, a man who chooses family, or a person that chooses family, is never alone. And that is what they depict entirely. Like everything on Kamala's side is all about choosing family. They have a wedding. They have people coming together, you know, and they're exploring each other's dynamics together. And it's also like bringing in someone from outside Pakistani culture, like the person Amir is marrying is like clearly not Pakistani. It's about developing a community. Whereas on the flip side, the Jin are part of that family, but they ostracize themselves. And it's kind of like the light side, dark side exploration, where what happens if you don't choose family? What happens if you're in an immigrant situation, but you choose yourself to kind of like fixate on the past, and you create a line between yourself and the place you are and the other people that you could connect with? And that's what the Jinns are, right? And that's how they've been led astray. They did not choose community. They chose something else. And now that we get who we are out of them. So it's this really fascinating exploration of South Asian community and the kind of the good and bad side of what happens when you kind of like embrace it or don't embrace it.
Yeah.
I was just going to talk about like, where do we see, like, what do we predict for the next episodes? Because we feel like we have this sort of second arc on the way, right? I think it was kind of surprising that in one episode we get, hey, we are the good guys. We are the Jin, and we're the stories you've been hearing about your whole life, but we're actually here to do some good. And then as soon as Bruno drops the news that something explosive will happen if you do the thing that they're asking for, and then it's like immediately, I would have preferred this reveal to happen maybe over an episode or two. And even though we kind of assume, all right, they're probably the bad guys, I just feel like we didn't get enough time to ruminate with that, really.
I think the really interesting thing is, like, most people currently assume Jinn are evil, bad, demons, monsters. But, like, if you know Islamic culture, you know there's good Jinn as well. So I really like that they put in Kamran in that kind of category a little more. Like, I think that he's going to be really interesting to see how it unfolds. I also think, like, the next episode, I feel like, is going to be a big Miss Marvel hit, like, an establishment piece of, like, hey, this is what I can do. Like, we had a little bit of her
costume.
Yeah, that costume moment also is profound for a big like the one where Bruno gives her the mask. And the reason I think it's profound is it's fairly obvious, but like, think back to what she was wearing before. She was wearing a helmet that covered her face, and now she's been given something that is a mask that allows people to see who she is. And I think there's a lot of symbolism in that, especially when it comes to the idea of, you know, accepting who she is and being the helmet came from, partially inspired by the old, you know, Captain Marvel helmet, but it also fits into the idea that she felt that she needs to hide who she is and the way she looks, a brown skinned girl. Try and blend in.
Yeah, and the brown girl from Jersey sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And now that she's got this mask, which we will see her face, her skin color, her hair, I think that's building up to a big moment where she has that superhero moment.
And it's- Yeah, it's that, and it's the one we're familiar with from, you know, Marvel's Avengers, right? But it's, and I forget the name of it, I apologize, but the red sash, right? Where even in this episode, she's like, you dropped this, you forgot that. We know she's going to add that to her suit, right? To add her flair.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's going to be the next episode. It's going to be a big, like, here's who I am, get to know me and get to love me.
We figure she's going to Pakistan in the next episode, right? That seems to be where we're going, with grandma popping up and being like, you got to come here, I saw the train too. Like, I assume, she goes there, and then maybe there you think she makes the suit? You think grandma helped make the suit, or great-grandma does through the train world?
Yeah, that would be cool.
So, jumping into the super nerd shit on this, Kevin and I were having a little back and forth on text before the show, so if he wants to hop in and with his theories too, that'd be cool. But if you guys noticed, in the beginning of the episode, when we're in India in the 1940s, and that cave-looking thing, on the floor, it's the Ten Rings. The symbol of the Ten Rings. And the little bracelet she has looks very similar, and the power emanating from it looks like the Ten Rings. And with the ending, the post-credit scene from Shang-Chi, where they're talking about, like, oh yeah, like, remember, it was Hulk and Captain Marvel kind of looking at this thing, like, we don't know where the power source is coming from, or all that stuff. Like, Captain Marvel being there at all is interesting, but now I think with seeing the Ten Rings iconography, it's like they're definitely linking this somehow, and that makes sense with us knowing that
Captain Marvel, he's been calling it from day one.
It's going to be part of that. What's up, Kev?
I was going to say, didn't they say it sent out a signal at some point that they didn't understand?
It's calling out to something.
I wonder if it's the same thing that had happened when Kamala put it on herself.
When the train kind of...
No. When she put it, remember, she put the it first on time. And...
Oh, she fell backwards into the...
Yeah, and like the aunt, or not the aunt, but the grandmother's friend or great-grandmother's friend... was like,
grandmother's friend.
Yeah, we felt was it. Like, oh, we felt it. So maybe it was a similar thing. And it just like, it, you know, to the right kind of people on, it sends out that signal.
Do you think the Ten Rings is like this cosmic fucking like United Nations? Like, you know what I mean?
No,
like,
coming
from all sorts of different cultures.
I mean, yeah.
Because the thing is, it's like the Ten Rings, like from what they told us in Shang-Chi, right? It's like they've been around forever, and it's like it being in India in the 40s, like adds up for like all the different places that we saw his dad in the movie, right? But I think what's interesting as well to tie into this is seeing the bracelet. It's not a bracelet. What's the name of it?
The bangle.
Bangle, yeah. Seeing that on this blue hand could be a lot of things, but I think the most obvious thing that it would be the Kree, which we saw featured heavily in Captain Marvel. And the Kree are the ones that did experiments that created the Inhumans, which is what in the comics Kamala is.
Yeah.
And I think that they're trying to find a way to MCU-wise add the Jin factor and like make it a little bit stronger of a story. While I was pretty 50-50 on, is she going to be Inhuman or not? At this point, I'm like, she's going to be Inhuman. And I think they're going to explain that in this show.
Yeah, I was... When the great grandma's friend was going through it, right, and she was like, "We've been called many things." The caption, the dot dot dot. And I was like, "She's gonna say Inhuman.
What's she gonna say?
They're gonna do it. They're gonna do it." And then they didn't do it.
Yeah, Kev had a wild theory that I don't think is gonna.
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna happen either. Oh. Wait, hold on a second. Is it just Tim or is everyone? Everyone's freezing.
Tim got crazy.
Tim, you're freezing. I think it's Discord having a little hiccup. Oh, Tim's breaking up real bad.
Oh, shit. Tim looks cool.
Tim is a shit.
I'm going to leave the call really quick and come back and see if that fixes anything. Hold on.
Tim looks awesome right now.
Oh, that's happening to you too?
Yeah, I'm getting on mine. He looks like he's seen.
I bet you hit the table and blue screened.
No.
Oh, no, he's back.
You guys sound all broken to me too, though. Hold on 1 second for my ludicrous.
Crazy on my screen.
Oh, you're back.
Now you're back.
Tim looks like the prototypical, like somebody's hacking me on a TV show.
Right? Yeah.
Like you had all the green artifacts kind of.
It's like when you make a decision in the quarry. It's like doing that weird, like.
Haven't played it. Never will.
Are we still good, Kev?
Yeah, we're still recording. Right. Everyone got bad for a minute there, so I wanted to.
Awesome. Let's close out this episode, Kev, with your batshit insane theory that is just as fun.
Which is just like, just so we're clear, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
No, but it's still cool.
I know that. I'm not delusional about it. But who else in Marvel is blue?
Yondu. Nebula.
Yondu. Apocalypse, guys. Apocalypse. And what is his name when he like ascends
En
to like
Sabah Nur?
That's right, En Sab Nur.
Yeah,
Nur.
He's Middle Eastern Egyptian. So
that's true. He is Egyptian, but Asia. I mean, you know, who knows how big his reach was?
I would love to see that. I think that is very cool.
Or if the Mandarin like somehow got access to his weapon afterwards. Well, the other thing is he has a bunch of future technology, like from the super far future, that ended up, it was Kang the Conqueror took into the past when he was trying to take over Egypt and become Pharaoh, and the Fantastic Four like stopped him.
Interesting.
We see the Lohan, camera pans up. Yeah. Hey, Dad.
All right, Greg, you had your hand raised to close out the episode.
I wanted to get in before Kevin's dynamite theory. Great job. But I just wanted to give a shout out to my favorite moment of the episode when they brawl into the kitchen and Kamala's like, everybody's got to get out of here. And they ignore it. Yeah. And then the first guy comes in, hits him. The one lady goes, absolutely not. They all fucking walk out. I laugh.
Yeah, also, big shout out to Brown Jovi.
Yeah, I was about to say, moment of the episode for me, the payoff to last week's joke. Brown Jovi does it all. Limit on a prayer kicks in for a fight scene. This show is dynamite, y'all. It's so damn good.
We do weed, we do quinceañeras, we do it all.
I love that you picked basically all the Brown events. Yeah. I was like, we'll do all of those.
Great. Tam, will you be joining us next week for this episode?
I would love to. I'm going to say yes, hopefully. But you know, things are wild right now.
Mm-hmm. Things are wild. Where can people find you in the meantime?
You can find me on Twitter at Tamor H. I'm on Twitch as Tamor H. You can find my content on GameSpot or Giant Bomb. And here, I guess. Hopefully I can do a Kind of Funny Games Daily again soon.
Yay!
Hell yeah. Anyways, stay tuned for all of your needs here on Kind of Funny for Star Wars, Marvel, all the fun stuff. Our Kenobi finale review should be live right now. Kenobi. So you can go check that out. But until next time, I love you all. Goodbye.